I meant to do my work today, but a brown bird sang in the apple tree, and a butterfly flitted across the field, and all the leaves were calling me. And the wind went sighing over the land, tossing the grasses to and fro, and a rainbow held out its shining hand. So what could I do but laugh and go?
The author of those thoughts about work was Richard Le Gallienne. But it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
Work. That's often a dirty word to a lot of us, to my kids, to you, and to me. And why is it? Why should it be? What constitutes work, anyway? What makes work work? And why don't we like it? Well, you could say that work is hard, that it takes effort. But here I think we should bring in another four-letter word that's also a dirty word to some people. Sometimes it seems so to you. I'm sure that grown-ups think so. And that's the word play. Now, play is often also hard, and it also takes effort. You might say, well, work is when you get hot and sweaty or uncomfortable or cold or so forth. But I can remember, for instance, building snow forts, and it would be considerable effort to roll up those snowballs and to pile them up, and you'd get sweaty under your snowsuit. And then when you'd be there in the fort and building snowballs or waiting around for the enemy to come, you would then get cold, and you would get very worn out, I would. And yet it never occurred to me that I was working. I was playing. If someone were to ask you, what's the opposite of work, you'd say play. And if somebody said, what's the opposite of play, you'd say work. And yet it really can't be that one is hard and the other easy, or that one is comfortable or the other uncomfortable. It's got to be something else besides that. Take a little baby, for instance, just learning to walk. He doesn't know the difference between the words work and play. And he will work very hard at learning to walk, getting up and falling down and getting up and falling down, and will expend tremendous energy. The same thing for learning to tie his shoes, the same thing for everything he does. There is no work, there is no play. There's just intense, exciting, fruitful activity. I can remember when Elspeth, and all the other kids for that matter, were three or four, the dishes were something that were infinitely fun to them, to stand up on a stool beside Mommy and to get their arms into that dishwater and the soap suds. And yet, who now of our four would touch the dishes if they didn't have to, according to the work chart? I have a comic strip here that I tore out of the newspaper. It's Ponytail. And Ponytail is running off out of the house while her mother is vacuuming, and she says, see you later, Mom, I have to meet the gang. And the mother says, oh, what about your chores? And Ponytail says, aw, Mom, have you cleaned up your room? But, Mom, I'm late, I'll do it tomorrow. Besides, I'm too tired. Oh, very well, where are you going? And as she joyfully dashes out of the house to meet the other kids, she says, hiking in Oak Park, climb to the top of Mount Baldy, go roller skating, play some tennis. Why is it that work makes us tired, and play, while it still might make us tired, doesn't make us tired in the same way? Where does the difference come in? Somewhere along the line, we get the idea that little children play. And then comes school, or when you get older, and that's work, and that grown-ups work, and they don't very often play. There seems to come a time when the world tells us that play is over, that harsh reality and drudgery have set in, and that's often pretty early. I've mentioned the schools, and alas, they often do this to us. In most schools, there's a pretty sharp distinction that when your work is over, the teacher says, then you can play. Well, there are lots of what are sometimes thought of as new ideas floating around, modern education, that you learn best when you're playing, that you learn best when you're doing something that you like to do and when you aren't forced to do it. But is this really a new idea? I've got a book on the history of modern education, and it starts way back with the Greeks, back with Plato, well over 2,000 years ago. And here is what Plato is saying about work and play. For the free man, there should be no element of slavery in learning. Enforced exercise does no harm to the body, but enforced learning will not stay in the mind. So avoid compulsion and let your children's lessons take the form of play. And as I read through this book, I discovered that here was Quintilian, who is a Roman somewhat later, but still a long, long time ago, saying about the same thing. And in the Middle Ages, a fellow named Rudolf Agricola said this. He was lamenting that in the schools the children did nothing but memorize Latin. And he said, if there is anything that has a contradictory name, it is the school. The Greeks called it skole, which means leisure, recreation, and the Latins ludus, that is, play. But there is nothing farther removed from recreation and play than school. Martin Luther, a little later than Agricola, said, enjoyment and recreation are as necessary for children as food and drink. If we are to teach children, we must become children. Would to God we had more of this child's play. So you see the ideas of work and play being not that much different are really not new. They're really very old. But then where did the idea come from that work is so virtuous and that play isn't? Right alongside this idea about work has been this idea about play, that play is frivolous, that you don't learn anything, that it fritters away the time, that it doesn't discipline the mind, and that anything that's fun can't be worthwhile. And unfortunately, that idea is often stronger. The Puritans, in their books for children, would say things such as, let thy recreations be lawful, brief, and seldom. Keep on with the work. It wasn't so very long ago, the last century and well into this, that work equaled discomfort and that discomfort was good for the soul. I have here a chart that Bronson Alcott worked out for the running of his household, and he was the father of the original Little Women that Louisa May Alcott wrote about in Little Women. And he has very carefully outlined when they are working, when they are playing, when they are studying. And at the foot of his chart, he says, vigilance, punctuality, perseverance, prompt, cheerful, unquestioning obedience, government of temper, hands and tongue, gentle manners, motions and words, work, studies, and play distinct, no interchange of labors. So that was the kind of household that Louisa May Alcott grew up in. And I have also here a little old-fashioned book from the last century written by Jacob Abbott, who wrote some 200 books for children, most of them the Rollo books. He is telling how Rollo learns to read. One evening, Rollo was sitting on the floor by the side of the fire, playing with his blocks. He was trying to build a meeting house. He could make the meeting house very well, all except the steeple, but the steeple would tumble down. Presently his father said, Rollo, you may put your blocks into the basket and put the basket in its place in the closet and then come to me. Rollo obeyed. Then Rollo's father took him up into his lap and took a little book out of his pocket. Rollo was glad. He thought he was going to look at some pictures, but he was disappointed. He was disappointed. That is, he found there were no pictures in the book and was sorry. His father said, I suppose you thought there were pictures in the book. Yes, sir, said Rollo. There are none, said his father. I have not got this book to amuse you. I am going to have you learn to read out of it, and learning to read is hard work. Rollo was very glad when he heard this. He wanted to learn to read so that he could read storybooks himself alone, and he thought that learning to read was very pleasant, easy work. His father knew that he thought so, and therefore he said, I suppose you are glad that you are going to learn to read, but it is harder work and will take longer time than you think. You will get tired very often before you have learned, and you will want to stop, but you must not stop. What, said Rollo, Must not I stop once at all the time, till I have learned to read? Oh, yes, said his father, I do not mean that you must be learning to read all the time. You will only read a little while every day. What I mean is that you must read every day when the time comes, although you will very often think that you are tired of reading so much and had rather play. But no matter if you are tired of it, it is your duty to learn to read, and you must do it, even if it is hard. I do not think I shall be tired, said Rollo. Very well, you can see. Only remember, if you should be tired, you must not say so and ask not to read. So Rollo's father opens the book and shows him all the letters and columns and so forth and explains to him the plan by which he is to learn to read, which is that his sister Mary will teach him. And Mary will call him every morning at 9 and teach him his letters for a quarter of an hour. And she'll do the same at 11 and at 3 and at 5, and the rest of the time Rollo can have for play. If he should at any time refuse to come when she calls him, or come sullenly or in ill humor, or if he disobeys her or makes any trouble willfully, then she's to put the book away at once and not teach him any more that night, but to tell his father. And so Rollo begins learning to read under this fearsome regime. And later on, Rollo's father brings some books and some blocks and things, some play cards with pictures and letters on him. And the author asks us, the reader, do you not think now that it would have been better if Rollo's father had tried to make learning to read more amusing to his little boy? He might have got a book with pictures and letters, too, or he might have brought some cards and blocks with letters on them and let Rollo learn by playing with them. That would have been more amusing. Do you think that would have been a better way? I think it would not. For if Rollo had begun to learn to read, expecting to find it play, he would have been disappointed and discouraged a great deal sooner. Well, it goes on at great length about the difficulties and the work of learning to read, but it reminded me how all of our girls learned to read, which was that the books that they had around them were so attractive, and they had spent so much time poring over them from the time they could sit up and hold a book, that they knew all their letters long before Rollo did, and learned to read almost automatically. But Jacob Abbott's idea, who wrote the Rollo books, was that work ends in an accomplishment and that play does not, and that certainly anything that is an accomplishment can't be achieved by way of play. The idea that one can enjoy one's work, that one's work can be play, is foreign to many people. I know a girl, for instance, who felt that she couldn't go into art, which was the thing she loved to do, as a life work, because you shouldn't be paid for what you enjoy to do. And this sort of thing dooms lots of people to life works that they hate, because they feel that in order properly to be working, they have to be disliking it. We shouldn't leave our discussion of work and play without a mention of the famous whitewashing the fence passage in Tom Sawyer. Tom, you see, goes out to whitewash the fence, and as he surveys the fence, writes Mark Twain, all gladness left him, and a deep melancholy settled upon his spirit. Everybody else, you see, is going to play, and Tom isn't. And so he pulls his famous trick, where he pretends that he is enjoying whitewashing the fence, and all his friends come around. Hello, old chap, you got to work, hey? Tom wheeled suddenly and said, why, it's you, Ben, I weren't noticing. Say, I'm going in a swimming, I am. Don't you wish you could? But of course you'd druther work, wouldn't you? Course you would. Tom contemplated the boy a bit and said, what do you call work? Why, ain't that work? Tom resumed his whitewashing and answered carelessly, well, maybe it is and maybe it ain't. All I know is it suits Tom Sawyer. And then, of course, everyone comes and wants to help do this job that Tom is finding so enjoyable. And Mark Twain comments after the fence is all whitewashed, Tom had discovered a great law of human action without knowing it. Namely, that in order to make a man or boy covet a thing, it is only necessary to make the thing difficult to attain. If he had been a great and wise philosopher like the writer of this book, he would now have comprehended that work consists of whatever a body is obliged to do, and that play consists of whatever a body is not obliged to do. Today for our writing, let's write about work and play. What's the hardest work you've ever done? What's the hardest play you've ever done? What work did you feel the worst about? When have you enjoyed work that you thought you wouldn't? And when haven't you enjoyed play that you thought you would? Is play only frivolous? When did you learn something from playing? When were you prevented from play when you were really learning something? And like Tom, did you ever trick somebody into doing your work for you as Tom did? And when you did that, did you find out that it really wasn't work after all? It was play?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.